Hey humans,
want to optimize your cardiovascular health with real data? SciFox Health offers the easiest, most affordable blood biomarker testing kits. Test 17 key biomarkers like cholesterol, ApoB, and hemoglobin A1C from the comfort of your own home and get results at your fingertips in just a few days. Get 20% off at SciFoxHealth.com/Yami. Know your biomarkers and live healthier.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
So I was 18 when I did that protest. I did a few other protests around that time where I got arrested, but that was the biggest one. That was the one I spent, I think, like 2 nights and 3 days in jail. So,
oh my God.
We went all out. We brought barrels and we chained ourselves to the barrels to cut off access to the entrances. So we were, it was a big deal.
You are here for a reason, but navigating this human life can be challenging. How do you care for your body, mind, and spirit to make the most of your time here on Earth? How can you harness your incredible human potential? In this podcast, we explore these questions and more to help you craft your best life yet. Welcome to I Am Human. Welcome, humans. I am your host, Dr. Yami, and I am so happy to be here with you. Thank you for subscribing, rating, reviewing, and sharing this episode. We appreciate your gift of time and effort. To be human means to learn to ignore our intuition and our inner knowing so that we may continue to act from our human mind. But it also means to relearn how to connect with our intuition and that quiet guidance from our soul. My guest today, Meredith Walters, teaches these powerful concepts through her beautiful fiction writing. For as long as she can remember, Meredith Walters, author of This Animal Body, has wandered in forests looking for animals and magic and writing stories about what she found. Her life adventures have included volunteering for a nonprofit in Mexico, studying literature at UC Berkeley, getting an MBA, and working for a social enterprise startup. Her short story collection, The Adventures of Little One, was published in 2018. Today, Meredith lives in Atlanta, Georgia, working as a life and career coach, helping others rediscover their lost magic, and once again writing stories about what she finds on her wanderings through the woods. In this episode, we talk about her beautiful book, This Animal Body, what inspired her to write it, and we also talk about how much of this story actually reflects her own life and her own beliefs. We talk about her journey to her current way of eating, what she hopes people will take away from the book, if she found it difficult to write some parts of the book where she has to reflect upon animal cruelty and suffering, why she thinks humans struggle so much with connecting with their intuition and their higher selves, and how we can learn to connect to our intuition, our souls, how we can learn to reconnect with nature. It's a beautiful conversation. I know that you'll appreciate it and that you'll take away lots of beautiful nuggets of wisdom from this conversation. I also hope if you like to read fiction that you pick up her book, This Animal Body. It's very well written. It's very beautiful. It's a story that I still have with me in my heart. And I'm so glad that she wrote it. So I hope that you will also pick up a copy and learn some of these concepts through this beautiful story. So thank you so much for being here today. I appreciate you so much. And now let us welcome Meredith Walters.
The information on this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not meant to replace careful evaluation and treatment. If you have concerns about your health or well-being, please consult a healthcare professional.
Meredith Walters, welcome to I Am Human. I'm super excited for our conversation today.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I'm really excited to talk. Yeah, thanks.
Well, before we started recording, I told you that you're the first fiction author I've ever had on the podcast, but I'm super glad that I am going to talk to you about your book. So I have your, this is the advanced copy here, This Animal Body. I just love your book. Great job. And is really fun for a change to read a fiction book instead of having to do all the scientific, you know, nonfiction books that I read for my podcast. So I appreciate that. Congratulations on writing such a beautiful, touching book. What inspired you to write This Animal Body?
Oh, thank you so much for that. Yeah. So the real kind of the moment of inspiration came when I was on my way home from a walk through the woods near my house, and I saw this robin on the side, on the sidewalk. And there was something so knowing and deep and penetrating, just wise about the robin's eyes. And I thought in that moment about all of the hierarchies that we humans tend to put ourselves at the top of, you know, we're the most evolved, the smartest, the most capable. And in that moment, looking into the robin's eyes, just none of them made any sense. So this idea for a story came up that would reverse the hierarchies and show kind of a different perspective. And at the same time, around that time, I was becoming very aware of just how much we humans have separated ourselves from the rest of the natural world and how much pain that has caused the beings of the natural world as well as ourselves. And in particular, for me, that pain showed up as anxiety and depression. And so I wrote the book also as kind of a love letter to my younger self and the things I wished I had known when I was in the midst of that struggle and that suffering. And really kind of at the heart of it is the how it can be beneficial to see anxiety and depression not as individual flaws or defects, but really as a healthy response to an unhealthy world. It's kind of like the pain of touching a hot stove. It brings our attention to where it's really needed. And when we are paying attention and we're listening, I think when we listen to it, not the loud voice of hopelessness, but the kind of the quiet heartbreak beneath the despair, that when we listen to that, it can help us find our way back to connection to ourselves, to other people, and to the wider living world.
I love that. I love how much compassion comes through when you write this story and you're showing us these themes and these concepts. I'm a pediatrician, so I encounter a lot of things like that, anxiety, depression, but also even just ADHD and autism, some of the things that we are seeing higher prevalence of and higher diagnosis rates of. But the way that I explain it to patients and their families is that ADHD is just a brain difference. It's just a different way that your brain works. But because we have the world set up in a certain way, like you go to school and you sit there for 7 hours and you have to sit and pay attention and do things in a certain way, it can seem like it's a disorder. But I do like that different way of looking at things. And I found that for myself, that's true as well. I call it my inner donkey. So I'm really good. I'm type A, very driven. I am very good at pushing past my feelings and ignoring everything. But my donkey will stop me in my tracks. And it's also depression for me. So whenever I'm going in the wrong direction, pushing too hard, doing things that probably aren't aligned with what my soul really wants, but what my human brain wants, my donkey will stop all that. And I feel like it's like Eeyore, like it will just sit there and you cannot make it budge. It's like, nope, I am not moving until you align yourself in the right direction and you pay attention to what's going on. And so now I know when I have that feeling, I'm like, oh, my donkey's out. Okay, what's going on? Sit down, reassess, where am I not aligned with where I should be headed in this lifetime? So I love that perspective. Thank you so much for presenting that in the book.
Yeah, no, thank you for the inner donkey. I love that. That's a great way of relating to it. And it's so true. It's such a loving presence at the core. You know, it's so painful and it's also so loving. And I think of it as this kind of fail-safe mechanism, because me and my human brain, I'll come up with all kinds of ways to go off track and do things that aren't quite right, you know, for me. And I could live my whole life going down the wrong track, but yeah, that part of me won't let me. And it's this really wonderful way of keeping me to where I'm supposed to be, where I can be happiness, where I can contribute my best, where I can have the, you know, greatest impact and best experience. So it's really a lovely thing. It's just not always very pretty.
And what I like to say too, because so many of us are service-oriented, mission-driven people that want to help the world. But what I say is that the best way we can help the world is through our own joy and peace and contentment. And so sometimes we feel like we have to do so much, but really it's going inward, centering ourselves and radiating that joy. And sometimes that means pulling back and doing less to give more, which is very counterintuitive, especially in the American culture.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. We have such a cult of productivity here. And yeah, I mean, this is where the natural world has been such a great teacher to me, because if you look at all the animals going about their business, they are contributing huge things. You know, the bees are pollinating the flowers and helping plants continue and reproduce so that there will be plants in the future. Squirrels are bearing acorns that turn into trees. None of them are doing it from a place of sacrifice and martyrdom and, you know, like unhappiness. They're just being who they are. They're doing what gives them joy. And in doing that, you know, just being who they are, that's making a huge contribution. So it's a really great lesson for me to have learned also as a type A person who pushes and overachieves and feels like I should always be doing more.
And I love how animals, they have their rest time too. Mm-hmm. I mean, they do their things to survive and what they need to do, but then they lounge around, they play, they enjoy their time. You can tell that they're enjoying themselves as well. And I think that's a good lesson for us to learn as humans too. so we don't just have to be grinding all the time.
Totally. And with zero guilt, taking a nap in the middle of the day. Yeah. It's beautiful. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit more about how this way of thinking evolved for you, especially your connection to animals and nature. Is this something that you've had your whole life since you were a child, or did you discover this as you grew up?
Yeah, as long as I can remember as a child, I've loved animals. It's always been the fastest way to make me cry is to show me an animal suffering. And even like as young as 8 years old, I started writing stories about animals and the ways that I saw them treated that I didn't like. I wrote a story about a hunter who was taken on a journey to live as a different animal for a week, you know, for a different animal every week until he realized that the animals were his friends. And then it just kind of continued on from there as I learned more about the world and how we treat animals and the different types of connections that are possible with them.
And at what point has it affected your way of eating?
Well, when I was 12, I went to camp and sat at a table with a counselor who was vegetarian, and I was fascinated. So I was asking her all these questions about it. And she explained to me, you know, that she didn't eat meat because of the animals and she liked animals. And as soon as I realized that the animals that I loved were the same animals that I was eating, it just, I couldn't keep eating the way I was. So I went home and promptly announced that I was not going to be eating any more red meat. I knew it was too much to give it all up at once. I kind of had that sense that that wasn't going to work for me. So I gave up red meat. And then a year later or so, I gave up chicken. And then a year later, I gave up turkey. That was an interesting year explaining to people why I ate chicken, but not turkey. Nobody got that. But and then I gave up seafood about a year later. And then by the time I was, I think around 17 or 18, I went fully vegan and was fully vegan for about 10 years. So it was a, you know, somewhat gradual, but started as soon as I kind of made that connection.
It's funny how it's so normalized to eat meat that it can take us a while to realize that there's a connection with our plate, you know? Like, it's just like, this is separate. We don't even see it connected to an animal sometimes. And so when I've heard stories about kids happily eating their food until someone tells them, well, don't you know that that's a cow? And then stopping in their tracks and being like, wait, what? You never told me this. Like, what? And then be like, okay, that's it. I'm not eating this ever again. You know, it's just like so interesting how we're able to separate those things.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's one of the problems in our culture is how disconnected we've become, that we, you know, we see what we eat as coming from the supermarket rather than from an animal, which, you know, if you're going to eat from an animal and you make that connection, then there's gratitude and reverence and lots that we miss out on when we just see it as something separate.
Yeah. And I know that there's lots of ancient cultures and ancient traditions that have put that, they still eat animals, probably a lot less than we do. But when they do, there's still that acknowledgement. Like, you had to sacrifice your life for me. I'm sorry about that. Thank you. You know, but there's still that feeling. And now it's kind of like, we're like, no, we own you. We can do whatever we want to you. We're entitled to treat you however we want. It doesn't matter. So it's like a very different attitude towards animals and raising animals for meat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me a little bit more. I'm just curious about your spiritual beliefs and how that has evolved over time. Do you feel like your connection with animals has affected your spirituality?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think when I was young, I just implicitly felt the spiritual connection to the natural world. It felt kind of magical to me, and like anything was possible. And I felt connected, I think, to the deeper parts of myself, kind of not so much my fears or flaws or personality. It was that larger kind of true nature that I felt when I was out in the natural world, but I didn't have the language for that. And then when I got into high school, I started to lose touch with those parts of myself, and I got more into, you know, academics and achievement and sports and the things that I felt like I should be doing and achieving. And I really lost touch with the deeper parts of me and kind of the things that were my core, including my connection to the natural world, including writing. I actually, after writing a bunch of stories when I was young, I stopped writing completely for a time and completely lost touch with it. And so it was a real, I had to take a real journey back, which in some ways, you know, I think about like all those last years, but in other ways, I think having to come back to it after losing it for a time makes me really appreciate it and value it and know how to find it, you know, in the moments when I've lost connection with my soul or, you know, my spirit or spirituality. I know how to get back to it now because I've had to kind of make my way back. And that was a big part of my healing with depression and anxiety, was just reconnecting with the natural world and getting to know the beings in it, you know, just going on the same paths every day and seeing the same trees and the same rocks and streams and lizards and spiders and just forming relationships with them. Cause eventually, you know, they started to feel more familiar and they were more like neighbors and then friends and then eventually family. And so I think creating those connections and feeling like I was part of something larger than myself, this web of life, feeling like I have a place in it. I'm always connected to it. I have a role to play, you know, a purpose in it, things that I can contribute to it, was really, really healing. And then again, also connected me to that deeper part of myself again, which is so, so important for anxiety and depression.
And I feel like that was a big theme in the book too, is finding your way back after you've been lost, after you've lost touch with your intuition, because I think a lot of us do unlearn that connection with our intuition in so many different ways in life. But one of them probably is that soul connection, that spirituality that a lot of people feel like they're missing, that they kind of forgotten how to access.
Yeah. I mean, we're definitely trained out of it. I think we come into the world just in touch with our intuition and we act from it and it's part of who we are. And then we're trained, you know, not to listen to it, not to pay attention to it, to cut ourselves off from our bodies, to spend all our time in our minds and solve all our problems in our heads. And yeah, we're trained out of it, unfortunately. So it is a process of relearning and unlearning to get back to it.
So I really admire artists of all kinds, because I don't consider myself an artist. Like, I just love musicians and painters and writers and people who can create this. So I'm just curious to ask you, like, how much of what you write is inspired by your own experiences? Like, how much do you draw from yourself? How much of yourself are you putting into these stories?
Yeah, for this one, it was a lot. I think, you know, part of the reason that I stopped writing for those years was that when I was 12, I wrote my first novel with a 12-year-old's logic. I was like, I'm going to write a novel, no big deal. And I did. It was easy, you know, no problem. And I was so excited about it. I loved it so much that I entered it into my school's book contest, which was kind of designed for more picture books, but it came back with the second to lowest score possible. And so I was devastated. And that was part of what kept me from writing for so many years. So to come back full circle and have an idea for a novel and believe that I could write a novel again, this time, you know, as a 30-something year old, was a big deal. And so it was really helpful to be able to bring my own, base it on my own experiences a lot. That gave me a lot more comfort. So yeah, so love of animals Frankie has is definitely, as I said, you know, from my experience. I was never a neuroscience student, but, you know, was continually shocked and saddened by the way I saw animals treated around me. Did actually go to jail for an anti-fur protest. So that part came from personal experience. So not everything in there is mine, but a lot of it is.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. And it's so heartbreaking that the way that your book was perceived and evaluated stopped you from writing. And I think that happens so much in life, that we have this gift, but because of how other people perceive it or the comments they make, it may shut it down, you know? My husband's definitely not an artist, but I will say that one thing that he will never forget, and I don't even know how teachers can do stuff like this, but I guess it was like second grade or something. He was little, okay? Like, you don't expect second graders to be like professional artists, but I guess they had to draw and paint an apple, and he did his, and the teacher came back and told him, that is not a perfect apple. And then it was like, he had been proud of his apple. And I wonder, I was like, you never know, babe, you could have been some kind of world famous artist, but her comment, that was it. You're not going to paint ever again, you know? So I think especially for children that they're so fresh and so impressionable, we do have to be really cautious about what we say. Because to us, it may seem like whatever kind of comment, but to them, it can stay with them for lives. And not just children, adults too. But I just heard so many stories like that of people who had a gift and they suppressed it for so long because of how others perceived it or how they judged it.
Yeah, it's really common, and it is really heartbreaking. Yeah
and I think a lot of us would act differently and do things differently if we had the confidence to do it, you know? And I'm sure that that's something that you deal with in coaching, is that lack of confidence for a lot of humans. What do you hope people will take away from the book?
Yeah, there's a few things. So one is just a sense of hope that no matter how bad things seem, how much suffering there is, there's always a path to healing. And it's different for everyone, and we have to learn how to recognize what it is for us. So I tried to include some kind of clues to how we might recognize it. And then the second thing I hope people take away is a sense of belonging. There's so much isolation and alienation and loneliness in the world. And I think a lot of it comes from how disconnected we've become, in part from the natural world. So I think when we recognize that we're part of this just vast, beautiful, incredible, awe-inspiring web of life. We're connected to it. We have important things to give to it. Like, I think when we just acknowledge that and start paying more attention to it, we start to realize that no matter where we are, we're never alone. And no matter how imperfect we are, we're always loved. And so that real deep felt sense of belonging is something that I was hoping to give folks. And then the last thing is for people with depression, I hope that they get the sense that, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with you. And, you know, you're sensitive. And in our culture and the way things are now, that can be really painful. And a lot of people cannot understand it. It can even challenge a lot of people. But it's really a good thing. And it's a gift. And I think, you know, sensitivity brings a lot of compassion. And oh my goodness, the world needs more of that. And it also can help you find, you know, map all the places you might have become disconnected, or all of the losses that still haven't been acknowledged or grieved, and find ways to acknowledge and grieve and reconnect. And the beautiful thing is that when you do that for yourself, you make it easier for everyone else around you to do the same thing. And so it's really, it's you do it for all of us.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love all of that. And yeah, I always think whenever we live our truth, whenever we follow our path, we give other people permission to do the same thing, you know? So the more of us that do that, the more of us that will do that. Yeah. So it's like a positive feedback cycle. So I think you're right about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think, you know, the book is written beautifully. I don't think it's too graphic or anything, but I think that you did have to pull up a lot of images that were probably difficult. Was it hard for you to write the book in parts where you had to reflect upon animal cruelty and suffering. Was it hard to get through those sections? Tell me a little bit about that process.
Yeah, it definitely was. And actually, when I was planning the story, you know, I was kind of thinking about the characters and creating these characters that I loved. And then when I realized that something was going to happen to one of them, I fought it. I was like, no, that doesn't need to happen. I can find another way. And I tried to, you know, tried to not have that happen. But stories, they have a life of their own and you really have to respect it. And so at the end of the day, I had to accept that it was very clear that this is what the story needed and wanted. So I did it. But I cried the whole way through writing it. I cried every time I revised that scene and edited that scene. It was really hard to get through. And, you know, I also tried to show a different perspective on the scene. It's pretty critical to the book. I won't say more than that, but anyway, but you know, it's not all bleak. So
yeah. No, I think you approached it very well. And I think that there are a lot of things to consider when we're really zooming out and looking at the big picture of everything. But I just loved, because I didn't expect it. I loved how you turned things around. Like you were talking about at the beginning of the interview, on that hierarchy, because I hadn't ever thought of it that way. And it was so beautiful and refreshing. I was like, oh, I love it. And that makes so much sense. And I want that to be true. You know, I was like, yes, this is my new belief. That's going to be true for me. So, but yeah, that was just so beautiful. So. Oh.
September 29th is World Heart Day to raise awareness of the number one global cause of death, cardiovascular disease. We know that two critical risk factors for the development of cardiovascular disease are high cholesterol and diabetes. But so many people are living with high cholesterol and elevated blood sugars without a clue. If you want to live a longer, healthier life, it is essential to know your numbers so that you can take control of your health and make changes as needed. But we all know that getting labs is not an easy task. First, you have to see your doctor. Then they have to order the labs. Then you go to the lab and hope they can draw your blood without too much pain. And then wait for results. Once you have the results, you may not even know what they mean. What if there was a better way? SciFox Health has pioneered a novel approach to create the most comprehensive, most convenient, and least expensive at-home blood test on the market. They are the easiest, most affordable way to check your blood biomarkers. They give you the ability to test 17 critical blood biomarkers in a single at-home kit. It's easy to use and offered at an incredibly low price. It's clinically accurate, and you don't need a doctor's order to obtain it. If you want to decrease your risk of cardiovascular disease, there are several key biomarkers that can give you a picture of your cardiovascular and metabolic health. The SciFox Health Kit includes total cholesterol, triglycerides, HDL, LDL, ApoB, apolipoprotein A1, and hemoglobin A1C. ApoB is now being recognized as an important indicator of cardiovascular health, and most people have never had this blood test measured. SciFox Health reports are not just raw data. The team at SciFox created a unique scoring system called the Axes of Wellness that spans different health and lifestyle categories, such as inflammation, metabolic, and cardiovascular health. With this, they take the guesswork out of interpreting your results and empower you with actionable insights to improve your wellness. You can view your results in your secure dashboard, which includes personalized recommendations. It's very easy and convenient. Your kit is mailed directly to your home. Then you open your kit and simply follow the instructions. You supply just a few drops of blood and mail it back in a prepaid envelope. And incredibly, you get your results in a few days. It really is that simple. You don't need to drive anywhere or call the doctor's office repeatedly to get results. It's affordable and you have actionable data at your fingertips. Before I completed my first SciFox Health Kit, I had never had my ApoB measured, and I was so glad to have this piece of data about my cardiovascular health. SciFox Health is the easiest, most affordable way to routinely check your blood biomarkers and stay on top of your health. I'm so excited to be working with SciFox Health. Visit scifoxhealth.com/yami to get 20% off to test your blood at home and begin working toward a healthier you. That's SIPHOX health.com/yami. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then, when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. Renting from Armoire is perfect for me because I love fashion. I get bored easily. I love to try new things with low commitment, and I'm also a minimalist who is budget conscious. Clothing rental just makes sense. It's so fun. You get to try new styles that you may not be brave enough to buy and keep forever, and your wardrobe stays fresh and updated. We live in a small old house with tiny closets that get cluttered easily, but I love clothes. I don't want to compromise. I want to look cute and feel great, and with clothing rental, it's a win-win. My first shipment of rental items arrived quickly, and all my items were neatly folded, clean, and ready to wear. The first item I tried on was a pair of overalls from Wild Fang, and I've already worn them 3 times because they're adorable and so soft and comfy. Today, I'm wearing a beautiful floral linen wrap dress from Yumi Kim, and I feel so feminine. It's really elevated my mood. I have 4 more items to try this week, including some cute corduroy wide leg ankle pants, a pair of super wide leg jeans, a sophisticated midi dress, and a puffy sleeve V-neck sweater. Getting dressed in the morning is exciting, and I feel great all day. There are so many reasons to try Armoire. First and foremost, you'll always have something new to wear without the hassle and closet clutter. It's affordable. They have many plans to choose from, depending on how often you'd like to swap out your outfits, but it could actually save you money in the long run. It's sustainable. You no longer have to feel bad about only wearing an outfit once, letting it sit in your closet for years until you finally donate it. It also feels good to support a company that is women-founded and women-led. And finally, Armoire can help you define your personal style. It gives you recommendations based on your body type and what you already like, but it also gives you the freedom to explore different styles you may not otherwise buy. If you've never tried something like this before but feel intrigued, I recommend that you give it a try. Right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/Dr. Yami. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/DRYAMI to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Let's talk a little bit about why do you think humans struggle so much with connecting to their intuition and their higher selves, like on a soul level, but even just like physiologically, why do you think it's so hard for us?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, I've spent a lot of time reflecting on this myself to try to get an answer for me. And there's, you know, kind of three things that I've noticed in my case, and I think it's true for a lot of us. I've noticed it a lot in clients as well. One is just our brains. They're so smart and clever and busy, and we're always thinking, worrying, planning, ruminating, fantasizing. We have so many thoughts. There's just no room for anything else. And intuition is usually really quiet. It's kind of a whisper in my experience. And it gets even quieter when we ignore it for a long time. I think it's kind of like, oh, why bother? You know? So it's just often we're not even hearing it because there's too much else going on. And then I think part of it is, like we were talking about before, you know, we get trained out of it. So there's that, just our cultural training and habits and things we learn. And then the last piece that I've noticed in me is fear, because intuition is often not logical or predictable. I don't know what changes it's going to ask me to make or what uncertainty I'm going to have to step into. Often other people don't get it. So then there's a risk, I feel like, of rejection or judgment. And there's not a lot of examples to follow. So it just can feel risky.
I think you hit all three of those on the head. You know that that's so true. And I can totally identify with that feeling of fear, especially when it doesn't feel logical. It's not this calculated human thing, but you're just like, I just feel like this is the right thing to do, but I can't prove it. You know, I can't prove that it's the right thing to do. And what if I'm actually wrong? What if this isn't my intuition? What if it's something else? And so I think then we just overthink and we get into this like crazy thing where we just like need to settle and go inward and listen and be like, okay, I'm scared, but I'm going to go this way, you know? And I think a lot of times when people do that, they do find that it was the right way, even if it made zero sense at the time, you know?
Oh, totally.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. Some of the least logical things are the ones that had best results for me. And I find sometimes that can help, like tracking it. If you write down the decisions you made based on intuition and then write the results, it helps to remember, like, oh, right, good things happen when I trust this. But that's happened so many times for me, and I still doubt it, you know? So it's helpful to have that hard evidence.
Yeah, I like that, to track it, because then you can develop even more and more trust in your intuition, even when it is scary. All right, I want to take a detour, and I just have to give a little spoiler because I was shocked, but I'm Panamanian. In the book, there is things that happen in Panama. So I want to know, why Panama? Do you have any personal experience with Panama?
When I was getting ready to move from San Francisco, where I lived for 15 years, back to Atlanta, where I grew up, I went, right before moving, I went on a trip with my sister and her family to Panama that they had been planning, and I just kind of went along for the ride. And so my experience in the book is based on my time in the San Blas Islands and the Guna people there, the indigenous group of people who, you know, have, as I'm sure you know, fought to retain their autonomy and culture and succeeded. And so for me personally, it was an experience of, I was coming into it with I was in a very anxious time because I was about to make this huge, talk about intuition. I was following my intuition to move from a place where all my friends were, where I'd been for 15 years, back to a place where I only knew my family, hadn't lived for a long time, wasn't sure it was the right thing, but my intuition was pretty clear on it. So anyway, a lot of anxiety, and I wasn't sleeping well. This is where when I arrived at the San Blas Islands, I immediately just felt the people there, the connection to the natural world and to each other. And they were just so loving and so welcoming and so clearly connected to nature. My whole nervous system just immediately relaxed. I slept beautifully. I've had this strong sense of well-being and peace. And it was just, it was really transformative. And that scene that part of the novel that you're talking about is a turning point and important for Frankie to feel connection on multiple different levels. And so I wanted to bring her into a place where a really connective culture could help with that and show the power that a connective culture can have.
That is so amazing. But I also don't know how you were able to synthesize the personality of Panamanians so quickly. Because I was like, the character that she met over there. And then, you know, she started asking all these questions. I was like, yep, that's how we are. We're forward. We have zero boundaries when it comes to telling people certain things or asking them certain things. So I feel like I'm more American in some ways, that I'm definitely more like, I don't just, but man, when you're in Panama, there's like nothing off limits, either about your appearance or about anything. It's like, whoa, okay, you're going there. All right. You know, so you hit that one very well as well. And I've actually never been to San Blas. And I think it's because we're from the interior. I always went straight to my grandparents every time. I spent going every summer to my grandparents' house. My cousins have been, but I haven't. But it's something that I've been wanting to do for such a long time. So when I was reading the book, I was like, okay, next time I go to Panama, I'm going to make it a priority. We're going to go to San Blas. I'm going to take my kids. Also, because one of the things that you mentioned in the book, which is true about San Blas, is they're suffering too. You know, I mean, they're having problems with overfishing and, you know, lots of issues there. So hopefully it's something that can be preserved. But just as time changes and climate change and everything, it's affecting their culture as well. So, yeah. But that was really cool. Really cool that that was in there. And I was like, whoa, Panama, that's so cool.
I love that.
Well, let's move on because, you know, it's very interesting to hear that you got arrested for a protest. So tell me your thoughts about animal activism and animal rights protests. How old were you when that happened? And do you still have the same perspective on that type of activism? I'm just curious.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I was 18 when I did that protest. I did a few other protests around that time where I got arrested, but that was the biggest one. That was the one I spent, I think, like 2 nights and 3 days in jail. So,
oh my God.
We went all out. We brought barrels and we had chained ourselves to the barrels to cut off access to the entrances. So we were, yeah, it was a big deal. And San Francisco at the time was inundated by protests and was trying to, you know, find a way to stop, discourage protesters. We actually got charged with felonies. Yeah, it's kind of a funny story, actually. This is a bit of a side note, but we, you know, the defense was that we weren't trying to prevent people from going in. We were trying to get their attention before they went in because it was a felony to block a public walkway intentionally. And our lawyers basically argued, you know, there was a gap between the last person in the wall and we would have had to be idiots to, you know, not intentionally leave that gap. And the truth was we were not intentionally leaving that gap, but we were just like, yep, we'd have to be idiots. So that was the reason we were found not guilty, or we didn't get the felony charge. Yeah. So yes, I might do some things differently now from a little older vantage point. But generally, you know, I think activism and protests can be wonderful. They can have a really powerful impact. I think it really depends a lot on the energy and the intention of them. And a lot of them are coming from a place of anger and blame and judgment and othering of people, you know, blaming other people for the problems. And I think that, you know, it has some benefits in terms of it helps people express their anger. It helps them not feel powerless. So there's that benefit. But in terms of having the kind of impact they're hoping on animals in the world, probably not so much. And that was what I kind of learned. It was more for us than for anybody else. When it's done from a place of love, then it can definitely help spread awareness and, you know, stand up for beings who can't stand up for themselves. And so I've just kind of learned to look for that in any protests that I take part in.
Wow, what a story. So, okay, I'm curious about when that happened and you spent 3 days in jail. I can't even imagine. Oh my gosh. So how did your family react? Did they think you had just like lost it? What was everybody around you saying to you?
Well, my poor parents, I didn't tell them I was going to do this. So they just got a call from one of my co-organizers letting them know I was in jail. And then, you know, I finally talked to them and they're like, we're hiring a lawyer. And I was like, no, don't. I wouldn't let them hire a lawyer. I wouldn't let them do anything to help. So I wanted to use the public defender because that's what the other people, you know, in my group were doing. So yeah, I feel really bad. I'm sure it was horrible for my parents.
They were like probably so shocked. Like you're what? You're where? Yeah. What? You have the wrong Meredith.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, let's transition back again to talk about what we as humans can do to connect to our souls and guide us through life. And maybe talk a little bit more about connecting with nature. And I know this may sound too simple and basic, but I think some of us need like tangible steps for that. So if you could give us some tangible steps, because so many of us are so disconnected, what kind of advice would you have?
I think for connecting with our souls, it's noticing what it feels like when we feel connected to our souls. So for a lot of people, it's a sense of peace or love, harmony, connection, inspiration, awe, just noticing what it feels like for you. And there's often kind of a bigness to it for me. It feels like I'm larger than, you know, the fears or the day-to-day stuff, not so overwhelmed or fragile. So noticing that and then noticing what are the things that help me to feel that way. Oh, and particularly noticing it in my body too. I think the body is a huge resource for this. So what are the sensations in my body when I'm connected to my soul? And then what are the things that help? And so, yeah, so spending time in nature, is it for a lot of people? Definitely for me, but it can also be, you know, music, art, meditation, prayer. Sometimes particular people or places or animals can help us, other beings can help us connect with our souls. So just kind of noticing what those things are and then making regular time for them. And as far as kind of connecting with nature, basic steps, I think for me, it was just going on regular walks through the same trails and getting to know over and over. Now, one of my favorite things to do is to be still. So I think earlier on in my journey, it would have been hard for me to be still for that long. So the walking was great, but now I just love being still outside in the same spot. So I get to know that same spot through all the seasons. You know, I sit there for long enough and I'm still enough. The animals start to get used to me and they'll come closer and then I can get to know them. And I just try to be in my senses as much as I can. So really notice what I'm seeing, what I'm feeling on my skin or beneath my skin, the sounds, you know, the smells. That for me is one of the easiest and most enjoyable ways to connect with nature and just learning about the being. So I might see an animal and then be curious, you know, oh, where do they live or what do they eat? Where are they coming from? And so that helps me also build relationships and these cords between me and these animals, both the individual animals and the species. And then that leads to a whole lot more sense of connection. And then going back to connecting with your soul, I think another piece that's really helpful is noticing what it feels like for you when you're not connected to your soul, because we're inevitably going to lose that connection. And so what does it feel like in your body when you do? And for me, it's a sense of tightness inside or shallow breathing, not noticing what I'm feeling in my body, not feeling any sensations at all. I push, I overdo, I get grumpy and irritable, I get anxious and depressed, you know? And so then I know that, okay, you know, I've disconnected. So really paying more attention to my body, you know, even pausing a few times a day and just checking in what's happening in my body. It's like closing a feedback loop. So it's like when we're not paying attention to our bodies, it's like the thermostat is outside. The house doesn't know whether it needs to be warmer or colder. But when we check in with our bodies, we're bringing the thermostat indoors. So we kind of have that automatic feedback loop and we'll automatically start to adjust. So I notice like, oh, I'm really disconnected from my soul. So then I'll start to, you know, move towards the things that help me reconnect. And then lastly, I think, you know, to stay connected to our souls, we can check in with our bodies and our souls when we're making decisions and just imagine the different options and see which feels more aligned, which feels more soul nourishing, which gives me the best, the most positive response in my body. And then, you know, acting on that is another way to stay connected to it.
I love all of that. I want to touch really quick on what you said about paying attention to how we feel and what we do when things are not right, when things are not aligned. And for a long time, I was kind of an irritable person and I thought that that's how I was. And I realized my default factory setting is actually one of joyfulness and lightheartedness and, you know, laughter. And that when I'm irritable, it's because something is off. That's not my default setting. And so now I realize when I start to get grumpy and I'll just say it out loud, like, wow, I'm really irritable today. I'm not sure what's going on. I'm just maybe going to contemplate this or see. Sometimes it might just be as simple as like hormone shifting. And if that's the case, then it's just more of accepting that feeling and trying not to act irritable because I'm feeling a certain way, knowing that it's going to pass. But otherwise, if it's something that I've been pushing to the back of my mind, it's really trying to bring that forward and realize, okay, this is why I've been acting grumpy and irritable and snapping at people, because that's not the way I am. So there's something off here. But I think that's really important too, because sometimes if we feel bad for long enough, we start to believe that that's the way we actually are. Yeah. And so stepping back and being like, actually, that's not the way I am. I'm acting this way because something's been wrong. And sometimes it's been wrong for a long time. So I love how you brought that forward as well. I also want to say too, that, you know, I know you you lived in San Francisco, and some people live in big cities and there may not be a park nearby, but there's wildlife and there's wild things everywhere. Even in small little parks, right outside your window, there's birds and stuff. So even just getting outside and just sitting and being still and paying attention to everything around you that's there that you didn't realize was there, I think that that can be really helpful as well for people that may not have access to like the woods and the forest and the mountains. I live in the Pacific Northwest, so I feel like super lucky and grateful that it's all in my backyard whenever I want to access it. But some people may not have that advantage.
Yeah, but you're right. There is always nature wherever we are because it, you know, there's the sky. We always have the clouds or the sun or the moon and the stars. There's the earth beneath us. You know, usually there's some form of plant life somewhere we can find in the cracks. And even if it's just getting to know that one, you know, plant that's coming up through the cracks in the sidewalk, you know, there's a lot we can get from that. So yeah, usually it's a matter of noticing and paying attention more than having to get somewhere to find it.
Yeah. Okay. I love all of that. Well, Meredith, we're going to move on to the wrap-up questions. But before we do that, I just want to acknowledge you and I want to thank you. I feel like artists and writers don't get enough of this, but I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that you wrote this book. I'm so grateful that you were vulnerable to write it and to go back to, you know, your soul level that's saying, I want to write and I want to create these stories because we need it. And I do feel like when these themes and these concepts are written in a story, sometimes it impacts us even deeper than if we were to write it in a book that's like, this is how, you know, your mind works. This is how, you know, your emotions work. You know, it's nice to know scientific basis or step-by-step things, but sometimes when we read it in these beautiful, rich stories, it really can impact us on a deeper level. So thank you so much. I really appreciate you and keep writing. Keep writing.
So thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
What do you wish more people knew?
I think it's really the same thing that I've been saying, just, you know, how much pain of our pain comes from having disconnected from ourselves and the natural world, and just how there's always an open invitation to come back. You know, our bodies are always inviting us back. The natural world is welcoming us back, whether it's, you know, like you said, the bird offering his song or the plant offering her berries or creek inviting us in there. It's always inviting us back into our bodies and back into connection. It's always available to us.
How do you define success in this lifetime?
I think for me, it's really doing my best to listen to my soul and listen to what the world is calling for from me. And then just to give what I can as best I can, no matter how incomplete, imperfect, you know, flawed it may be, just to give whatever I can.
Love that. That's beautiful. Is there a goal or dream that has evaded you or something that you have left on your bucket list that you'd be willing to share with us?
Yeah, well, I have to say publishing a book was a huge one. So that one, I'm really grateful to have had the chance to do. I'm really interested in learning actually how to track animals, to learn more about the animals around me. So I'm kind of starting on that journey. And there's a lot to learn about, yeah, tracking animals. So I'm excited.
That's so cool. So like out in wilderness, you mean like looking for the signs of where they went and that kind of thing? Is that what you mean by tracking animals?
Although to your point, it doesn't even have to be wilderness. It can be a bridge, an overpass where a road goes over a creek or something. There's often lots of tracks there. I'm finding all the places where the animals are, even in the city where we don't even realize it because we don't see them, but they leave their tracks. So you can kind of find their stories, even if you're not there when they go by.
So cool. I love that. What does it mean to be human?
To be human to me is to be both flawed and brilliant, and both limited and limitless. This is really oversimplified, but in some ways for me, depression is about coming to terms with the things we've lost, and anxiety is about coming to terms with the things we will lose. So, you know, I think anxiety is this really impressive human effort to come to terms with the fact, just the truth, the fundamental truth that we're going to lose everything we love, right? We're going to die. They're going to die. We're going to lose it. And we're powerless. There's nothing we can do to stop that. So what do you do with that? And I think in order to come to not get lost in the anxiety, what it requires is to find what cannot be lost. And for me, that is the part of us that's limitless. That's our true nature, you know, pure love, whatever it is for you, you know, our souls but really finding out what that is for ourselves. I think most of us are pretty familiar with our limited selves, and it can be really, really helpful to get to know our limitless selves.
Oh my gosh, that's so profound. It's so beautiful. I think that can be very reassuring because I feel like my whole life, one of the reasons I've crammed in so much is because I've always had, from the beginning, I've had this sense that I have very limited time. But once I really started believing that I'm eternal and that this is just one incarnation, I have like literally all of eternity to do everything I want, I calmed down and I was able to become more centered and more content right where I was, knowing that it's already been a magnificent, amazing journey. It's only going to get better. But I think that helped take that scarcity and that desperation out of it. Like, I have to do this and I have to do this and I have to do this, because it never ends, actually. I'm going to be doing this for a long time.
Yeah,
that's beautiful.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
All right, Meredith, this has been fantastic. I've really loved getting to know you. I loved reading your book. I can't wait for more. So hopefully you have more in you somewhere after you take a little breather. And I hope that all my listeners grab a copy of your book, because I think it's very impactful, very beautiful, and I think they'll just love it. So This Animal Body by Meredith Walters, thank you so much. Where can listeners connect with you? Also, if you could tell us a little bit about the services you offer as well and where they can find your book.
So the book is available pretty much anywhere books are sold. So, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, although independent booksellers should be able to order it as well. It has widespread distribution. And people can connect with me at meredithwalters.com. I have resources there for free resources, as well as I offer coaching for folks who are wanting to find their calling and their soul purpose in life. And then, yeah, the book is another way to connect.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I appreciate everything you do. Keep up the great work. And I hope that you have a very plantastic day.
Thank you so much. I am Meredith Walters, and I am human.
Thank you for listening to another episode of I Am Human. I would be so honored if you subscribe to the podcast so that you never miss an episode. We love our listeners and take your feedback seriously. If you have questions or constructive feedback, you can email us at podcast@dryami.com. That's podcast@dryami.com. I am your host, Dr. Yami Cazorla Lancaster. I Am Human is produced by myself and Alejandra Parra. Graphics designed by Alejandra Parra. Music by Angela Sof with Glowbox Productions and edited by the Castos production team. Remember, human, you are here for a reason. Have fun, explore, and live your life to the fullest.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.